What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and this is a Zoom call. Headed over to Europe to talk to Beta. They recently did a music project. Some would say two legends collide. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But Beta, I just wanted to take a little time to get to know you. Like, where are you from? And how'd you get into music?
I am Dutch. I was born in Amsterdam, and I have very little talent for music, and I've never had it. But I started working with Brian Eno about 5 years ago, and even though I'm a writer and I have no talent for music, he asked me sometimes to help with lyrics, which I actually wasn't so bad at. And I write stories and I read them often. And Brian had a long time idea to put stories to music. So we worked together putting my stories to his music. And he did the music part and I did the story writing part. And that's how I got into music unexpectedly.
I got you. So it was never really anything that you were pursuing. You're a storyteller, huh?
I'm a storyteller. I'm also a visual artist. And music was always one of those things where I thought, oh, I'm so glad that I don't have any talent for it because then I can actually enjoy it. I don't have to try to do it. I don't have to try to sing or start my own band. My mother told me from a very young age, I had no talent whatsoever for singing and I should notice and I should play back. You know, when people are singing, I should pretend to sing along. So I never thought I would make music. And now we made a record together with Brian's beautiful music. And I can read well, so I don't sing on it, but I read on it. So that's something, yeah, I never expected it. So it's been a nice surprise.
So yeah, let's dig into it a little bit. So it's called Slow Stories. Not only is it a record, but it's got visual art. It's a book. There's a lot going on. Walk me through a little bit of did Brian reach out to you about this, and how did y'all meet?
I met Brian at a dinner for artists and scientists. And I think we were the only artists there. And the scientists were talking about really interesting science things, like what happened before the Big Bang and what alien life would consist of. And Brian and I were just talking about art. And we realized we had a lot in common because we both are very interested in why do people make art? What is the purpose of art? All over the world, people are making art in all kinds of shapes and forms, singing, humming, decorating, painting, gardening, you name it. So why do they do this? And Brian and I wrote a book about this together called What Art Does. And as we worked on the book, we started collaborating on just projects that we were both doing, just helping each other out, like what I mentioned earlier with helping with the lyrics a little bit. And he read my stories, and sometimes he gave me some feedback, and he really liked my stories, and obviously I loved his music. And then when my publisher asked me if I wanted to do a record for my short story collection, I mentioned it to Brian, and he said, "Well, let's start right away. Let's start recording." And so we began.
That's awesome. I think a lot about that question too of the purpose of art and why we do it. Of what what have you found? Like, I'm here in Alabama and Mississippi, and it has a rich music history. It has a rich history of a lot of bad and a lot of good. And I find like songs from this. From this area, whether it be coming off of the Appalachian Mountains or the Delta Plains or wherever this area is, it's not only do I find it important as far as entertainment, having something to listen to and enjoy, but it's also telling the story of our people and like what we're responsible for and like what we've done, and
Yes,
it's, I think it's in
absolutely.
art. In art, to me, has always been a great way to, especially if it's visual. I mean, a picture's worth a thousand words. But like, anytime you see good art, I mean, it immediately connects with you. Sometimes you can't even explain the connection.
Yes, and I think that's where the power of art lies, is that it deals with our feelings, and not all our feelings are verbalized. Not all of our feelings have turned into something rational in our minds that we can list in words. So sometimes it taps into something inside of us that we don't really have words for, and that can connect us. Because even though, well, you're from Alabama, I'm from the Netherlands, I'm sure we have differences and similarities in our lives and backgrounds, but you can be sure that we both have feelings.
That's right.
And we both feel know what it's like to feel sad and to miss somebody. We know what it's like to feel happy or proud. And that's why we can connect through art, because art deals with those feelings. And from our feelings, our values are built. And some songs can be a monument to our values, or carry them on through generations, and sometimes in inexplicable ways. I had this experience when I just came out of art school. I needed a side job to make some money, because as you may have heard, artists don't immediately start making loads of money when they get out of art school. So
Right.
I started working delivering the mail. And I worked in this post center in Amsterdam, which is where I had to pick up the mail, and there were lots of people working there. Mostly guys. I think it was me and another girl, and then 60 guys. And they were sorting the mail. And as they were sorting the mail, they sang along to Dutch radio. And it was a stressful time at the mail, because lots of people were being laid off, and people were cranky and worried. And then there was this one song, when it came on, everybody sang along with it and poured their heart out. And the song, funnily enough, is Maar vanavond heb ik hoofdpijn, and it translates as "But tonight I have a headache." And it's about sung by a woman who is fed up with her husband, and she sings, "Tonight I have a headache. You know, you went too far, and tonight I will have a headache when you come home and want intimacy." And this song, for some reason, unified everybody at the post office. My boss, all the guys, the girls, everybody sang this song, "But Tonight I Have a Headache." And for me, that was such an insight in how art can work sometimes. How we all sing this lyric, and I'm not really sure why specifically this song, but that's how art works. when we sing lyrics, sometimes it's more the feeling behind it that connects us, or the energy that's in the song. And that's why it never works when you think, oh, I'm gonna write a song for the revolution, or I'm gonna write a song about family values. And then you just come up with something horrible and it doesn't work. But if you write from a genuine emotion, you can connect people and you can connect to people, even with a song like, But Tonight I'll Have a Headache.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, I feel like no matter where in the world you are, right when you gave me the translation, I knew exactly what that
I always explain what the sentiment behind it is, but it might not even be necessary. I think everybody sort of knows what
Yeah.
this is about. Yeah,
Well,
so it's to me, that's the wonderful thing about art, that it reminds you of your shared humanity and your shared experience in life. And I completely forgot what the question was that this started out with, but I
oh
related
no.
to what you were saying about songs carrying meaning.
Yeah, you were sharing about like coming out of art school and you like I would probably say 99.99% of artists they don't come out of school just making a lot of money, so picked up the side job. So with your art, did you always draw and do visual art, or did the writing come first, or was it kind of hand in hand?
I was always a writer, even when I was really little. If I had a problem, if I would be lying in my bed at night and I'd be thinking about my friends and some issue that we had, I would turn the issue into a story in my mind in order to get a grip on it. So I have this memory of when I used to have a secret club when I was little, and there was this girl who wants to join our secret club. And in order to get into our secret club, you had to perform a task of daring, which was to get into a field with what we called the bull, but it was actually a cow. And this little girl wanted to join our club. She climbed in over the wire into the field. She stood in the field with a cow, and she was allowed into our club. But she tore her jeans in the process of the climbing the fence. And her mother was really angry at me, and she said I had to pay for the jeans. And she said, go get your piggy bank. This is your fault. You have to pay for the jeans. I must have been 8 or 9 years old. And I was very scared of this mom and this enormous amount that I had to pay. And that night, I was lying in my bed and I couldn't sleep. I was worrying about it. And then that was when I wrote one of my first stories, and it was about three squirrels and one squirrel who damaged her tail. And then the mother of the squirrel got very angry. And through writing this story, I got a little bit of a grip on the situation. I wasn't so scared of the mother anymore. I understood where this panic came from. And even though I was very little and I didn't fully get what was going on, it helped me. So I've always had this, this way of dealing with my feelings through writing stories. And how's that been for you? Has it always been music for you from a young age?
I picked up music when I was 15, and I'm from a very small rural community. Like my hometown might have a little over 500 people. And I would listen to music at church with my family and sing along with that, or maybe in the car with the radio. But it wasn't until I saw my best friend like playing his guitar live at the talent show to where I was like my interest was like really peaked to play. But I had always wrote. I keep up journals, like daily journals, or like you, like sometimes like something would happen. I mean, like with the girl ripping her jeans, like and you translate it over to squirrels and a tail. But I mean, like it's some of that same thing, especially when I was younger, and to be able to like go throughout the day to days and like step outside of myself and like try to see through their eyes. And before I even started crafting songs or beginning to try to write, I had so many years of just journaling that being able to tell a story, or even like If you and I were going through a difficult time and I was trying to express myself, well, it would be real easy for me to take you and I completely out of it and craft a song. And one of the first song that I ever wrote, it was about I had just gone through a breakup, and it was called Fractured Light and Discolored. And it was like the whole thing was I don't think we ever really understood each other. And so like the way that the light was coming in on everything that we had, we never really had a chance. We never really saw anything for what it was. And like just yeah, just so I've been doing it for well over half my life now. I've been writing songs and playing for 20 years now. But like, and the older I get, the more into like visual arts that I am. I'm not good at it yet, but I do enjoy it. And I can get my point across. It's just not as pretty as I would like it to be.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I feel about art that is kind of going wrong in our education is that we don't explain so well in our education what art is for. So when children reach about 8 or 9, they reach this stage called the rational stage, and they want to know why, what am I doing this for? So why do I have to learn history? Why do I have to learn math? And then you say, I have to learn math because it's important later. And if you want to become a builder or you want to have a store, you need to know math. With art, we struggle to explain this. We struggle to say what you're doing it for. So when you're, for instance, making drawings, when you see when children reach age 9 or 10, they say, I'm not good at it. And what they mean is, it's not photorealistic. I'm not achieving a level of photorealism like my friend Frankie does. And therefore, I will quit. Same with singing. I don't sound great. People don't want to listen to me. I'm bad at singing, and therefore, I will quit. I think getting really skilled at something is one of the things that is admirable in an artist, and is one of the reasons why we love an artist. But we can also love artists who are really bad at something. In that sense of skill, of photorealism, of having the best singing voice, because they put something in it that is genuine and that we can connect with. If you look at, for instance, David Byrne's dancing, I think I read somewhere that he wasn't a very good dancer, and then he looked in the mirror when he was dancing and he was moving kind of awkwardly, and he decided to magnify his flaws. So instead of trying to dance smoothly, he decided to dance more awkwardly. And we love the way he dances. So he used his flaw and he amplified it. It could be that I've made this up. I feel like I read this somewhere. And that's what I hope. I teach art as well in art school now, and I hope to also tell my students, you know, if you're bad at something, if you feel like this is not your talent, why not amplify it, play with it, go a bit deeper into it. Don't stare too much at the perceived flaws. And I need to tell myself as well because, you know, I have the singing thing.
I mean, absolutely. And that's such good advice. And, I've just through doing this podcast and we do art festivals and we do different things for any kind of art that you can imagine. And a lot of times, like with those new artists and like we have such a nurturing, like visual artist group here in this area that it's exactly like what you said. So what if it's not photorealistic? If it's not like I'm looking at you through this camera, like you're really good at, being abstract, and like you're really good at bringing things out of your mind that nobody has ever seen before, and it looks strange or odd, but my goodness, nobody else but you could come up with this. So lean into that.
Exactly. Yeah, there's only one you, and that's where it's at. You know, my art students always want to know, what kind of artist will I be? Can you compare me to someone? Or I want to be like him. And we say, you are the thing. It's you. Be more into you. And not necessarily in a kind of navel-gazing kind of way, but more in a, you know, trust your instincts, trust your tastes, follow them, and keep pushing. And then the most interesting things happen in that excitement. And Brian Eno has really helped me to learn about that as well, because one of his great gifts is that he fully trusts his own taste. He cannot be influenced. So if you walk around with him in a secondhand shop and he'll see a cookie tin that he really loves, he'll pick it up and he'll say, "This is the most beautiful cookie tin I've ever seen." And he'll hang it on the wall next to a really expensive painting. And he doesn't care at all that nobody hangs a cookie tin on the wall and that it's hanging next to an expensive painting. He just feels like, "This is what I like. I like this cookie tin and this painting." And he doesn't care about conventions that way at all. And I've learned a lot from this because I realized that was actually something that was holding me back a lot, where I thought, "Is this really good art? Am I supposed to do this? Is it okay? Can I make a record? Is that acceptable?" You know, where are these questions coming from, this inner critic?
Oh
Such a
yeah.
bummer.
Yeah, and on a lot of that, and I mean this may be someone listening or watching this conversation, but oftentimes the only person that's kind of gatekeeping or holding you back is yourself. 'Cause I mean I'm sure, and Brian probably helped walk you through this, is like you don't need anybody's permission to make this record. If if it's something that
No.
you want to do, and if it's something that you believe it needs to be done, do it, and do it at your own pace, and you'll know when it's finished, and you'll know when it's ready.
Exactly, and that's the tricky thing when you make art, is that you have this inner critic and then the outside world doesn't always get it. So when you're working on a book, you can count on people after a year asking you, "Is the book finished yet? Is the book finished yet? Or is your album finished yet? Does your band have a number one hit yet?" So those questions can weigh on you, and they can make you feel like you have to speed up or you have to achieve something that you never set out to achieve. So it's very important to take a step back once in a while and remember why you actually set out to do it, and remind yourself that some of the best books in history took 20 years to make, and it's all fine. It's all okay.
That's right. I wanted to like peel into the project you and Brian did together, and one of the stories that kind of really caught my attention was the Endless House. Could you like tell me a little bit about how that developed, and just for those listening, just like a inside scoop on the Endless House.
The Endless House is a short story that I wrote, which is about a girl who dreams a new room into being every night. So, when she's born, her mother realizes that every night a new room comes into being, grows onto the house. And the only person who can access these rooms is the girl. When she starts growing up and she's older, she is the only one who can enter these rooms. And her house is growing into a giant house called the Endless House. And that's the story, and it goes on. And we've recorded it on the record through to Brian's music. And the music kind of adds a layer of time to reflect on the story, time to let.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Let it build in your mind's eye in between the sentences. And that's what the endless house is. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, that's like just what I've been reading over, and like what they have shared with me to check out is this is a remarkable project, and I'm really happy that to be having some time with you today to talk about it. And so
Thank you.
like something pretty cool about it is, like, I did this with my record, is there's only going to be so many copies that exist.
Yes.
And was that a Brian? Is that something Brian really likes doing, or was that something y'all both kind of decided?
Well, we've done it before with our book, What Art Does. We made a limited artist edition first, and we painted it, and we sold it to collectors, and that way we raised money for our nonprofits. We're both really active in social projects, and we thought it's such a beautiful way to raise money to make an artwork that you're really proud of, and make a painting to go along with it, and then give people something really special, and then at the same time raise funds. So that's why we did it as a limited edition. And there's a very few that we've made, only 444.
And so, and we'll plug it again at the end, but I mean, just for those listening, if they wanted to get their hands on some of the work that you and Brian have done, or maybe even your own work, is there a website or somewhere they could go?
Yes, absolutely. If they would like the record in the special edition with the painting, they can go to unnamedpress.com, which is my publisher, and they sell the bundle, which includes paintings that Brian and I made together. And with the record, you get one unique handmade painting as well. And if you, yes, yeah, we also did painting. If you just want the book is there as well with in an unlimited number. And while I'm at it, Brian and I also wrote the book What Art Does, which is available in stores all over the place, and it's about art.
I'm gonna have to get me a copy of that, because, like, that's the question that we're always wrestling with here is whether it's a local art council, or if it's I guess we seem to be at the generational passing of the torch to where
Yeah.
we have these new artists who are their art is good, and they're beginning to get ready to do what the artists before them did. And it's like, okay, if we're going to pass the scene on, you need to understand how the scene works and how things are done. But also, you don't have to do it the way that we did it. You can add your own flair. I mean, this is going to be your
Yeah.
scene now. So, I mean,
Absolutely.
I
And
and I think
it's
that's and I, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please.
And I and that's just one thing, like, with I think, like, what art does, and I think within a community or a group or however big the collection is I think you'll probably get a different answer about every time. And it might just be
Yes.
for a season, or it's a great question.
It's a really good question. What does art do? And I know Brian had been thinking about this for 4 decades. He's been giving lectures about it. And I started thinking about it in art school when I made a drawing along with one of my stories. And my teacher told me, "This is not art. This is an illustration. It's not art." And I was in kind of a highbrow art school, high conceptual in Amsterdam. Maybe you can sort of imagine what it's like. Everything is very strange and conceptual. And I made just an ordinary illustration with a story. And my teacher said, "This is not art." And I was really surprised because if it wasn't art, then what was it? And where does art end? And how does that work? And how do I know when I made art? And we had classes in art school, art philosophy about what is art, and we read all the philosophers and Kant and all these guys. And I couldn't relate to it. I felt that it was making too complicated what we were doing. I thought there is not a difference between art, a Rothko painting, and if somebody makes a drawing in their house, there might be a difference in skill level, there might be a difference in appreciation level, but I'm not buying that it's a different activity. It's the same activity. When my grandma's embroidering a pillow, when I'm picking out clothes to go to a party, or when Kafka is writing his novel, The Castle. It's all the same activity. It's all art. And there is not a division between some really fancy intellectual stuff and everyday people singing on the street corner. It's the same thing. So that's what I objected to in art school. And when I became an art teacher, I thought I really need to wrap my head around this question. What is art? What does it do? What do we do it for? Before I can start teaching it, I actually need to understand it. Because if you teach somebody race car driving, you know what it's for. You know what the purpose is. You want to get as fast as you can without dying. If you teach somebody baking, you know what it's for. You want to make things that you can eat in the end. So if you make art, what is it for? What do you judge it by? So that's why Brian and I really related on this question and this thing you just said about, you know, doing work around art in the community, having to maybe defend it in city councils or asking for grants. You need to know, what is it for? Why do we do it? Mm-hmm. What is useful about it? So that's what we set out to do in the book in as simple language as possible. And I think we got somewhere. So I'm very curious, once you've read it, what you think?
And that's, I mean, and that's great, because I, and I'll tell you, and you know it as well as I do, just whether it was university or whatever level it was of education, but I always knew when I had a good teacher immediately. And it was, you know, it would be often like when you're a little kid and you, you know, you ask your mom or your dad why you can't do something, and they give you, because I said so, or no
yeah.
means no. Or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
if you're in a classroom and you ask the teacher something, it's done this way because I said it was this way. It's always good to actually have an answer, you know? And so, like,
yeah.
that was always how I gauged whether or not I was about to get a good education or not.
Yes, absolutely. I fully agree. I've always appreciated the teachers who were able to explain what was happening. You know, why do I have to learn French? That's a really good answer to that, you know? They speak it in a bunch of countries. It's quite useful. So it's really nice if somebody can explain what is happening and takes you seriously. And also express doubt as a teacher when you say, this part I don't know, or let's find out together. And with art, and especially in art school, making art is very personal. So when your students come in with a poem that they wrote, and it's a really sad poem, and it just goes on and on and on, 15 pages of sadness, but it's their personal feelings, you have to come from a really confident place to say, perhaps make it a little bit shorter. Or, you know, you need to know why you're giving that feedback, so you're protected against judging them from your personal taste, which is very dangerous. So you have to speak from a confident position of knowing what you're doing and why, what it is for, and craft, knowing your craft. And that's what I wanted to establish before I started teaching. And I think I got there enough to do it.
It sounds like it. I wanted to ask you about the heroines movement.
Yes.
Tell me about what made you want to found it or begin it, and what is it up to today? How has the idea grown?
Well, I published my first book in the U.S., Rust Like Everyone Else, a novel, and I had this amazing book tour across the U.S., across bookstores, and the book deals with all these big questions about capitalism and living in a red race society, and how to deal with bureaucracy. So in a very lighthearted way. So I wrote this book to deal with these questions that I had. And in this book tour, which was wonderful, people, they wanted me to sign the book and they asked me questions, but it was a very one-way street. They wanted to hear from me. Well, actually, I wanted to hear from them. I wanted to know So how do you feel and what do you think? And I wanted to hear their ideas, and I realized I miss this exchange and I miss the idea of doing something that has a direct impact on these topics that I care about. I think art has impact, but I also wanted to do something practical. So I co-founded a foundation for artists and scientists and people in all kinds of businesses and fields to work together on social issues. So we get together and we have these conversations that I missed about society and how we feel in it and what we think could be improved. And from this, projects are born. And the Heroines Movement is one of these projects. And it's a project that gives girls around the world women role models through storytelling. And we found it really important to make sure that these projects are conceived locally. So we have a team in Nepal and they created their own book. They are Nepali and they thought about what do girls in Nepal need to hear. The girls in Nepal don't have a lot of women role models. There's a lot of child marriage. There's stigma on getting your period. So these were topics that the Nepali book addressed in a beautiful, arty, illustrated book that is distributed to 800 schools across the country. We have a team in Afghanistan now. The woman who works there locally, she has to work in secret. She is also deciding what kind of stories do women need, what kind of role models do we need right now, what do girls need to see. We have a book in Iraq, a book in the Netherlands, which I helped create, which is in lots of primary schools in the Netherlands. So it's a way for me to also address my desire to have a more direct positive impact on society and deal with some of the things that keep me up at night in a more direct way than making art about it. So that's the long story, short story of the Heroines Movement, which is what we're raising funding for.
Well, that's incredible, especially like something so like take the Nepal, whether it be the culture of the Nepali, but like addressing something that is gonna happen naturally, and it shouldn't be, it shouldn't make you feel bad or any different. It's just a stage of life that you're moving into, and
Yes.
that's pretty great. I mean, I'm sure it gives them confidence, or maybe helps them not feel so alone whenever that happens. Because I know it can be a challenging time when it first happens.
Especially in cultures that see it as a bad thing or a dirty thing. And if you are the first person in your community to say, when I have my period, I will leave the house, which is in some Nepali communities not acceptable, then if your grandpa dies, everybody's going to think that's your fault because you left the house when you had your period. So that takes a lot of guts. And the remarkable thing is, through working with social psychologists, we also learned that a role model doesn't have to be a person who's in your life. It's great if it's your neighbor or your auntie or that wonderful teacher at school, but it can also be someone that you read about. The most important thing for a role model to have impact on your life is that you need to be able to relate to them. So when the Nepali girls in the countryside who have no electricity read about Marie Curie, it doesn't have any impact on them. Because Marie Curie is not in a child marriage and she has electricity and etc. But when they read about role models that they can relate to, that actually can have a really positive impact on ambition, self-image, confidence, and the same with boys, obviously, everyone. Role models really help. And that's what we try to provide through these stories. And we find it really important that we don't go around the world saying, this is how you should do it. So we've created all these beautiful collaborations with local people who decide this is what it's going to look like in my area. And it's fun as well.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, good grief. I mean, What a movement, and something incredibly worth doing. That's incredible. Well, Beto, I didn't want to take up too much more of your time. I wanted to ask you three more questions, and we'll wrap this up. Question one, just to go back with the latest project that you and Brian just did. Just wanted to plug the title of it and how people can find it.
So Brian and I recorded these two stories on a record, and it's called Two Slow Stories. And we're selling it through my publisher, Unnamed Press, on their website. And it's in a limited edition, and it's now available for a pre-sale. And it comes with a handmade painting that Brian and I made together as well, which is unique too, and my short story collection. Yes, so that's the slow stories bundle plug.
Right on. Question two, when you personally feel like you're having writer's block, or you just can't get whatever is in your head on paper or on canvas, what are some effective things that you have found to get back creative again, to be able to get those ideas out?
That's such a good question. I would say a really important one is, what is the thing that you enjoy doing at the moment, which is art related? So if you enjoy painting Easter eggs, if you enjoy making a playlist for in the car, if you enjoy singing with your grandpa while you go for a walk in the park, do some more of it. When you sing with your grandpa, just do a little bit more of it, do it a little bit longer. Even if you actually want to write a really complicated novel or make a death metal album, focus on the thing that is going. Sing with your grandpa, record it a little bit, and see where it takes you. So focus on the thing that is flowing right now. That is a big one, because very often we have this judgment in our minds on, I should write this big complicated novel and not make these doodles on pieces of paper. But actually, it might be that those doodles are way more interesting than that complicated novel that you want to write. So that's, I'm speaking about myself right now with my big ambitions sometimes. That's one thing. And the other thing is collaborate. Find your others, find the people who also enjoy doing this thing, and do a little bit together. That's the second one. And the third one is do something slow. So do something for 5 minutes every day. I have a drawing in my studio that I work on for 5 minutes every day. 5 minutes, I can always force myself to draw for 5 minutes. It's only 5 minutes. Even if I really don't feel like it, I'll draw for 5 minutes. And after 2 years of doing this drawing is pretty huge, and it's turning out kind of beautiful. So that's a really nice way to help yourself over this threshold of blockness.
The person that taught me music, and when I was reading about this new record and the advice that Brian was giving you, slower, slower, slower. The first music teacher I ever had, what he would repeat to me all the time, slow down. He said, get the mechanics down and then you can speed up. But it doesn't matter how fast you can do it if you can't do it correctly. Take your time. It's nobody's in a rut. Nobody's racing. Nobody's in a rush. It's just you. Figure it out. Slow down.
Absolutely. And in our society, we're so result oriented. And from the age of 10, people will start asking you what you want to be when you grow up.
Oh,
When you're
yeah.
at your job, they ask, where do you see yourself in 5 years? You're always planning ahead, and everything is geared towards some kind of result. Well, actually, art is very much process based, and sometimes it takes a little slowing down to remind yourself of this. Like, I'm doing something process based. I should let it flow in the moment, and then the result will come later. And so, yeah, that's very good advice that your teacher gave you and that Brian gave me in the studio to
And
slow down.
last question to walk this out the door is, for those listening who may want to keep up with the heroin movement or even keep up with your arts and what you're up to, is there social media? Is there a website? Or how do people do that?
We have a website for the heroines movement, heroinsmovement.com.
Okay.
I have a website, betaa.com, beta-a.com. And I don't have social media anymore, which is related to this whole slowing down business, and getting my attention back.
Okay.
I think, that might be my first piece of advice, or maybe the first and only one. Get off the
Yeah, it's it'll make your day a whole lot better, won't it?
Oh, yes, it made a b I found it hard to get off, and even in my contracts it says I'm obliged to have social media. So many artists, they have to build their brand and they have to be on social media all the time. But what is the price you pay? Did you really become an artist to market yourself around?
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.